Navadvaram Dvihastangri Tatra Manuta Sadviti. Yada, when
Jigrikshan,
desiring to enjoy,
Purushah,
the living entity, Kartsnyena,
in total,
Prakrite,
of material nature,
Gunan,
the modes,
Navadvaram,
having nine gates,
Dvi,
two,
Hasta,
hands,
Angri,
legs,
Tatra,
there,
Amanuta,
he thought,
Sadhu,
very good,
Iti,
thus.
Translation.
When the living entity
wants to enjoy the modes of material
nature
in their totality,
He prefers,
out of many bodily
forms,
to accept that
body which has nine
gates, two hands,
and two legs.
Thus he prefers
to become a human
being or a
demigod.
Purport.
This is
a very nice explanation
of how the
spiritual being,
the part and
parcel of Krishna,
God,
accepts a
material body by
virtue of his own
desires.
Accepting
two hands, two
legs, and so on,
the living
entity fully
enjoys the modes
of material nature.
Lord
Krishna says in
Bhagavad Gita
7:27,
Icha
dvesha
samutena
dvandva
mohena
bharata
sarva
bhutani
sammoham
sarge
yanti
parantapa.
O
Skyana Bharata,
Arjuna,
O conqueror
of the foe,
all
living entities
are born into
delusion,
overcome
by the dualities
of desire and
hate.
Originally,
the living entity
is a spiritual being,
but when he
actually desires to
enjoy this material
world, he comes
down.
From this
verse, we can
understand that the
living entity first
accepts a body that
is human in form,
but
gradually, due to his
degraded activities,
he falls
into lower forms
of life,
into the animal,
plant, and
aquatic forms.
By
the gradual process
of evolution,
the living entity
again attains the
body of a human
being and
is given another
chance to get out of
the process of
transmigration.
If he again
misses his chance
in the human form
to understand his
position,
he is again
placed in the cycle
of birth and death
in various types of
bodies.
The desire
of the living entity
to come into the material
world is not very
difficult to understand.
Although
one may be born in a
family of Aryans,
where
there are restrictions
against meat-eating,
intoxication,
gambling, and
illicit sex,
still one
may want to enjoy
these forbidden
things.
There is
always someone who wants to go
to a prostitute for
illicit sex,
or to a hotel to eat meat and drink wine. There is always someone who wants to gamble at nightclubs or enjoy so-called sports. All these propensities are already within the hearts of the living entities. But some living entities stop to enjoy these abominable activities and consequently fall down to a degraded platform. The more one desires a degraded life within his heart, the more he falls down to occupy different forms of abominable existence. This is the process of transmigration and evolution. A particular type of animal may have a strong tendency to enjoy one kind of sense enjoyment, but in the human form, one can enjoy all the senses. The human form has the facility to utilize all the senses for gratification. Unless one is properly trained, he becomes a victim of the modes of material nature, as confirmed by Bhagavad Gita 3:27. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashat ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by nature. As soon as one desires to enjoy his senses, he puts himself under the control of material energy and automatically or mechanically is placed into the cycle of birth and death in various life forms. So here Narad Muni is explaining how the living entity becomes entangled in the material world. That even though he's part and parcel of the Lord and it's his natural tendency to serve the Lord, he somehow or another has come under the control of the modes of nature. And that somehow or another is due to desire. Everything is carried out by one's desire. You have a desire, then that is the direction things go. That's the way things manifest. You don't have a desire, then that area does not need to manifest. Right? So one is put into those situations in which those desires of your what you have are able to fructify. Or, if one is not so pious, one's put into a situation in which you have the desires, but the situation doesn't allow them. In any case, the point is that it's due to desire that the various situations the living entity is in. So, then here it is given the point that the living entity prefers out of all the different forms that of the human being. Because the human being, the human form of life, can enjoy all the senses. As Prabhupada's pointing out, is that as one becomes degraded, one overly focuses on one of the senses or a specific sinful activity. So that sinful activity can be carried out in that particular animal form. Right, so that becomes prominent. But the other aspects of enjoying the senses aren't necessarily there. So the animals, even though one sense they can enjoy very, very greatly, the others they can't. Right? Does that make sense? It just can't. Like it mentions, how you catch all these different animals is the fish is caught by the tongue, right? But they're not known for having great ears. Right, an elephant is caught by the skin, but their eyesight is very bad. Right, plus they're very big. You can anytime you move, you knock something over. So it's like you have to stay outside. So is that a sense? So it's that one thing is developed, but the others are reduced or even lacking. Right, like worms don't have any eyes at all. So. The idea is that the human form, then one can enjoy all the senses. Now the problem is this is being done under the modes of nature. The living entity thinks, I am enjoying this. But actually it's just the modes of nature interacting with the modes of nature. You're just standing by and you say, oh, if this happens, then I'll be happy. Right? It's just like you're watching something. If you say, well, if it goes the way I would like it to go, then I'll be happy. But you're not even the one that's involved. Right? Other people are interacting. Does that make sense? So that's what's going on, is that we can follow that by taking part in wanting to see Krishna and his energies together and Krishna happy. Then we stay under the internal potency. Right? Otherwise, then we're put under the external potency. And then, again, it's the modes of nature. They interact. But we think, I'm doing this. Right? In the spiritual world, Krishna is doing things. But because we think I'm Krishna, then we think now in the material world, I'm doing something. So in this way, the living entity becomes distracted, thinking I'm enjoying so many things, I'm doing so many things, I'm taking care of my needs. But actually, all you're doing is watching these things happen. It's not you. You can say, no, but I tasted it. But you're the soul. The tongue tasted it. You're not the tongue. But you're in close enough proximity, you can get the experience. But you're not the one tasting. You're not the one doing. Right? So the point is you're not doing and you're not getting any benefit. Now that's stupid. Right? Right? Well, in the spiritual world, you may not be the doer, but you're getting the benefit. Now that's intelligent. Right? Because that's the nature of the jiva. To take part in a superior energy's activities. That's what jiva means. Right? But because it's the nature of jiva, one is fully satisfied. Right? One gets the same benefit. Just like we feel we're getting the benefit of the material energy, even though we're not actually doing it. We'll have the same feeling of getting the benefit of the superior energy. Right? So the one is dead matter, so there's not really a lot happening. We're kind of having to do a lot of mental, you know, things. Right? Because in the spiritual world, it's going on and they're enjoying. It's not a matter of speculation. Right? It's not that one of the cowherd boys loves going out into the fields with Krishna and one doesn't. Right? You know, oh yeah, no, yeah, been there, done that, you know. No, but that's what goes on in the material world. So we can actually understand you're not enjoying by engaging the senses. Because the same way you're engaging your senses, the other person says that's not enjoyment. Right? And they've done it. And they've given it up. So that means here, it's actually, there isn't anything. We've just projected there should be. And because it's going on, that creates the experience. Right? Oh, we're going to do something. I haven't done it yet and already I'm feeling excited. Nothing's happened. Right? We're already getting experience. So all that is the same thing. So if this happens, then I'll be happy. So if that happens, I say I'm happy. But it's not that the interaction itself gave you anything. Does this make sense? So it's an illusion. But in the spiritual world, this is real interaction, real senses. You means basically you could say in the spiritual world, you are that body. Right? Because it's an expansion of the soul. So it is you. But here it's not. So it's an illusion even that you're even getting any experience here. It's the modes of nature. But because of the nature of jiva, it's a superior energy. You work, cooperate with it. You get the experience that is gained there. Right? But here it's so-called. But in the spiritual world, that experience is unlimitedly times greater. And it's real. It's not so-called. So that's what's being offered. Right? Stay here. Think you're enjoying something, or go to the spiritual world and actually enjoy something. And the difference between the thinking and the actual is unlimitedly different. Millions and billions of times different, right? It's already said to be millions of times different, the Brahman platform. And then beyond that, that's millions of times more to the actual devotional platform. So you have millions upon millions is the actual position of devotional service. And over here, it's given one point of enjoyment if you're the emperor of the world, undisputed, like Yudhishthira Maharaj. That's called one point of material enjoyment. So we can understand we're dealing in, you know, a lot of zeros past, you know, the in the negative, you know, minus one, you know. Does that make sense? You know. 10,000th, you know, 100,000th part of one item of enjoyment. So they're taking that one item of enjoyment and saying millions of times more than that. Not millions of times more than what you're getting now. That you'd have to say billions and trillions. Does this make sense? So this is what we're being offered. Is we can stay here and go on with the illusion that it's really happening here. Right? Or go back to Godhead where it actually is happening. And the difference is which energy you put yourself under. The external, you stay here. The internal, you go there. Being under energy, that's our position. That is what a jiva is. Right? We're never the doer. We're always the assistant. That's just who we are, right? You know, like a hammer always drives nails, right? Takes out nails, right? It doesn't like, you know, cut up the potatoes or something. You know? No, but I want to cut potatoes. No, you're a hammer. It's just the way we are. It's just who we are. But the point is, because that's who we are, we're fully satisfied. Right? Does that make sense? That's the way it works. So, this is the point, is that it's simply the desire. Right? That's the whole point. Paranjana, it was simply desire. He was interested in enjoying the material energy. So therefore, that's what he did. And it didn't work out so great for him, right? When he came in contact with the devotee, then it started to work. So the real benefit for the living entity is to come in contact with the devotees. If you don't come in contact with the devotees, there is actually no benefit in material life, right? There's nicer situations, that means it's a better opportunity for coming in contact with a devotee, and a situation that's less nice to come in contact with a devotee, right? Pious activity means if there's a better opportunity to contact a devotee. Impious activity means less of a chance to contact a devotee, right? If you're sitting in an opium den somewhere, like that, how many devotees are going to go in there, right? Like, so unless Nityananda himself walks in there, there's a good chance you're not going to meet anybody, right? But you're doing a pious, you're doing a nice yajna, or you're doing something like that, there's a chance a devotee might come. So that's the only benefit of pious activities. If you think there's any other benefit from that, you've missed the whole point. I mean, the whole point, absolutely, totally. The only reason is pious activities have any, why they're glorified, is simply because there's a better opportunity for contacting devotees. That's all. Because in the material world, whether the illusion is this way or that way, it doesn't matter. It's an illusion. Right? If I take some pixels on a screen and they do some nice work, or the pixels on the screen do some bad work, does it matter? It's just a file on your computer. That's it. It's no better than that. So that's what the material world is. But because of illusion and identifying with it, we say, no, this activity actually is good and this activity actually is bad. No. Good activity means opportunity to connect with devotees. Bad activities means you won't contact devotees. That's all. That's the meaning. So the point is that our desire, by our desire, then we can contact devotees. And by contacting devotees, then that's where benefit comes. We're interested in knowing the Supreme Lord, then we get benefit. Right? That's where benefit starts. That's where human life starts. That's where reality starts. It's when we contact the devotees. Before that, it's not real. It's the modes of nature. It may look nice. We may say, the karmis, no, but they behave so nicely. They have culture. They're professional. They're getting results. That's the modes of nature doing that, not them. Just like you're not doing it. You're not your body. It's not that we're not our body and we're not the doer, but the karmis are their body and are the doer. No, they're also not their body and not the doer. So it's the modes of nature. That's all. So all it is you can see how expert Maya is. Right? And Maya is the reflection. So if you like professional, check out the spiritual world. They really know what they're doing up there. Right? That's the position. Right? So, yeah. So the whole idea is that if we take advantage, we have the desire to know Krishna, we take advantage of the association of devotees, then we will benefit. If we don't do that, we won't. So our advancement is solely dependent upon how much we appreciate the association of devotees. Basically, it boils down to that, right? That's how you define who's advanced, who's not advanced, is by how much the association of devotees is appreciated. Because Krishna is always surrounded by loving devotees. And so that means we're going to be serving Krishna, right, as a jiva, under the superior energy, means with those devotees who are also jiva and who are working under the superior energy, who are devotees. That's our position. So if we like devotees, appreciate devotees, respect devotees, serve devotees, that will get us back to Godhead. Nothing else. No other qualification. Because those other qualifications are the modes of nature. That's one of the symptoms of a neophyte. He thinks my material qualification is my advancement. Right? I was some professional before, and now I come into Krishna consciousness, so I'm doing these things because other devotees don't know that. It puts me in a leading position, therefore I'm advanced. No, you're in a leading position because that's how the mechanics of the material world work. Someone who's a manager manages people who aren't managers. That doesn't make you advanced, it just makes you a manager. Right? Does that make sense? It's very simple. Right? That's all. Advancement is how much you appreciate devotees, how much you relate to devotees, how much you interact with devotees nicely, how much you want to please Krishna. That's a devotee. That's advancement. Right? So that's why you have both the example of someone very exalted and very expert like Yudhishthira Maharaj or Arjuna, and you have the simple Brahmin who can't even read. Right? And the Lord appreciates both. Hanuman's moving big mountaintops, and the squirrel and the spider are just kicking in a little bit of dust. Krishna sees them both the same. He doesn't make a distinction. Point is you're fully engaging body, mind, and words in his service. That's what's appreciated. Otherwise, then he would have said, yes, Hanuman's greater. Hey, spider, move out of the way. Hanuman's coming. Didn't you see Hanuman coming? Right? No, he didn't. Hanuman said, move out of the way, I'm coming. And Krishna said, no, don't, this is not the way it works. Does that make sense? So it's simply you desire, that's the point. You desire to please Krishna, you engage the body, mind, and words in Krishna's service, in the association of devotees, then everything goes nicely. Then you go back to Godhead. You don't do that, you think, I am the doer, I am the controller, I am filling my desires, then you stay here. Because this is where you do that. There we serve, here we try to enjoy. That's the choice. And the fun part is when you try to enjoy, you get less, right? And when you are trying to serve, you get more, right? This is the secret to dealing with energy. You want something from energy, you'll never get it. You're not looking for it, but you're just doing your duties nicely, then you get it. This is the secret. Any questions or comments? Yes. There's a funny little mic thing, dingus. Doohee.
It's mentioned about sports.
Sports.
And it puts it in the same category as, sex, gambling.
It's in the same category as gambling.
Gambling, why is that?
Because you don't really know how it's going to turn out. You know what I'm saying? It means, in other words, there's this excitement that something will happen like that. The idea is that gambling creates this intense excitement of gain. So sports also do it. Like you see, little kids, they play, and it's their nature. When they grow up, then they less. But when they play, somebody wins or somebody loses, it doesn't matter. They all laugh. You know, they kick the ball and get a goal, they all, whoa, how do you ball? Both sides, right? And if they kick it and it goes off into the neighbor's yard, they both go, ooh, like that, you know? It's fun for them, it's just a way to engage the senses. But you see adults, when they're playing the same game, you kick the ball, that they're so serious, you know, when they make the goal, they're there ripping off their t-shirt and sliding on the grass and doing all kinds of weird stuff, right? And if it goes the other way, then, you know, everyone's criticizing, they're taken off the field, this, that. I mean, it's life and death, you know. It's the difference between you get millions of dollars or you get nothing, right? So, therefore, it's like gambling. It's just that intensity. Because the point is why are these four regulative principles? Because you're dealing with illusion anyway. So it's not that it's real, but why this illusion is singled out? Because this illusion takes up all the space in the mind. It attracts the full attention. Right? You just don't notice anything else. Like you see Bill the Mongol, he wants to go visit his friend. He doesn't notice the storm and the snakes and the dead body and all this kind of stuff. And so this girl is watching all that. You know, girls know who they are, right? And he's thinking, no girl's worth that, you know? It's not that she's thinking, oh, wow, he so loves me so much, he's going through all. She's thinking, this guy is stupid, you know? Why would he work that hard to be with a girl? Like that. He says, you know, so she pointed out, if you work this hard, you know, for God, you'd be a great saint. You know, you're really misapplying this. You got so much focus, you know. So why are you focusing on a girl? You know? Like that. So that's the point. It distracts so much that there is no space to be God conscious, because one is so overly absorbed in the senses. Right? Means in others, meat eating, you're willing to kill somebody just for a taste. That's what it is. It's just a taste. Right? So that's the problem. Intoxication means you don't want to deal with reality. So the point is God consciousness is reality. So that means you don't want to deal with reality. It means you don't want to deal with, okay, the mundane facts. But that also, it clouds dealing with transcendental facts. So all these four just intensely take you far in the position of so much ignorance that it's impossible basically to be God conscious. It's not that, you know, these have just been, singled out just because, you know, the acharyas want to give us a tough time or something, right? You know, these are what everybody wants to do, these things. Why do you pick those? Pick something else, okay? You can't play, Scrabble, okay? Like that. Better not find anyone playing Scrabble here, you know, like that. No, but I like vocabulary, so what? Like that. It doesn't matter. It's not that. No, they pick these ones that distract. Does that make sense? That's why all these then have their regulation. For those who are too attached to them, there's their regulation. And then, you know, there's so many rules to do with it. And then that regulates, because anything you regulate loses interest. Because the idea of mode of ignorance is spontaneity, that I do whatever I want. Right? It's not within a framework. See, spontaneity within a framework, that's the mode of goodness. Spontaneity without a framework, that's the mode of ignorance. Right? So we're attached to the spontaneity without a framework. I can do whatever I want, whenever I want, however I want. That's no framework. So that, it just increases ignorance, right? It sounds good. It sounds very liberal and modern and all these kind of good stuff. But it's actually just a motive. It's nicely presented ignorance. That's all, right? It's, intellectually produced, presented ignorance. So people buy it, right? You know, it's called academia. It's called philosophers. It's called editorials in your mags, called journalists, is called all these kind of people. It's just well-packaged ignorance. Because all they're talking about is doing whatever you want to do. Psychologists, any of these kind of things. So they are just telling you, do whatever you want to do. That's the definition Krishna gives in the Gita of mode of ignorance. And Krishna made the mode, so he should know. Right? You know, we can't say, no, but that's your opinion. No, that's God's opinion. So it means, you know, okay, your opinion, God's opinion, hey, okay. You know, so, yeah. So it's just mode of ignorance. So you're trying to bring, so therefore if you regulate it, it brings it into goodness. So your attachment to it may be mode of ignorance or mode of passion, but you're having to function within the framework of goodness. That's why the Vedic culture, everybody, no matter what mode they're in and what their purpose, they're having to function within the Brahminical culture. So they're forced to actually live a Brahminical-based, or at least in principle, lifestyle. You know, you have to have guru, you have to work according to Shastra, you have regulations, you can have to do things at certain times and certain places, and, you know, everything, your time, place, circumstance has to be right, all these different things. So it regulates, you have to think about it. It makes it, but you're still able to express that passion. You know, you have desire, but after a while, so much work, you start to see this is not worth it. And then you move forward into knowledge. Or you can say, oh, this is too much work, it's not worth it, and drop back into ignorance and give everything up. Right? That's the modern concept. Oh, regulation is too much trouble, so we'll give up regulation. No, regulation is too much trouble, so let's give up the activity that's being regulated. If you don't like the regulation, give up the activity that's being regulated. Because the only reason you're being regulated is because you're doing this activity. Does that make sense? But we say, no, I'll continue the activity, give up the regulation. That's called the mode of ignorance. Right? But if we say, okay, I'll give up the activity, that's then the mode of goodness. So that's then why the Vedic literature recommends that. The Vaishnavas, because, so that's the slow path. Right? The slow path is you follow these things, gradually you'll be uplifted. You know, over thousands of lifetimes, millions of lifetimes. The quick path that Krishna recommends is just you do it for Krishna. So since you're doing it for Krishna, you only do things Krishna likes. And because Krishna, therefore, one, if you develop the personal that you're doing it for Krishna, and two, you're not doing any nonsense activities. Does that make sense? So then that's the process. Is that okay? Yes.
In the 18th chapter, Krishna describes the five factors of action and soul.
Right.
What
sense is he the doer? That he has the desire but everybody else carries it out. Just like the child, you know, the family goes to a restaurant, right? So then the parent will ask the child, what do you want? So is the child the doer? No. Does that make sense? No, he says, okay, I want the French fries. So then who orders the French fries? Who arranged to get you there? You know, who sees that you eat them? You know, who pays the bill? Who interacts with the waiter? You know, who sees that you act like a human being? Right? You understand? So the child is not actually doing, but they get the experience that what I want, I'm getting. But they're not actually understanding. They're not mature enough to understand what is going on. So that's the thing, is the conditioned living entity is not mature enough to understand that actually it's a modes of nature carrying it out. Right? So material nature is like the mother. She takes care of everything. But we have the desire. She carries it out. But we think we're doing it. Like that. So here karta means because we think we're the doer. Just like the soul is called Purusha because he thinks he is. Right? That's it. God is Purusha. Material energy is Prakriti. The soul is Prakriti but thinks it's Purusha. So if we're dealing with conditioning, we call him Purusha. If we're dealing with devotional service, we call him Prakriti. It's just the mentality. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
You were bringing up the four regular principles and it caused a question in my mind. Sometimes we hear that people say that if you follow the four regular principles, this brings you to, this makes you a Brahma. And then if you chant Hare Krishna, this brings you into transcendence.
Yes.
So my question is if you're following the four regular principles, are you a Brahma?
Means it's the platform of goodness, but unless you also follow everything else that goes with it, how you'd be classified as a Brahmana.
That's my question. Are you a Brahmana if you're following the four regular principles?
Didn't I just answer it?
Yeah.
No, the point is that's the point, that's the process it's going to get, because you're telling, if you follow the four regular principles to a devotee who's already following a human program. So for them. But for a karmi, he follows the four regular principles. It doesn't mean you don't become human until you inquire about the Supreme. Like that. So it may be the proper culture. Because like we see, even the tribals who wouldn't be interested or necessarily functioning on the human platform will follow so much elements of the Brahminical culture. Like that. You see how they dress and how they act and deal with guests. They do basically the same thing. Just the standards of cleanliness, the standards of other things are just not that great. You know, so that's what we're saying is you may meet some people who they themselves are actually nice people, pleasant people, like that. So, but it's not necessarily, they're not devotees or not necessarily even human. You know, like let's say you have a Malecha. Generally they're in a better position than a Yavana. Because the Malecha is not necessarily, is not opposed to the Vedic principle. They're just sinful. Well, a Yavana is someone who's opposed to the Vedic principle. So you could have a Yavana who follows the four regular principles. And you could have a Malecha that breaks them all. But the Malecha will be actually favorable to learning about Krishna consciousness while the Yavana wouldn't. So the point is it's just, in other words, since it, you're dealing with the material energy and we identify with it, therefore there are favorable situations in which if we put ourselves in, it will be better for Krishna consciousness. Simply because they function in the negative in that they don't distract you, or they function in the positive that they actually connect you to Krishna consciousness. Like associating with devotees, that brings you in contact with Krishna. Avoiding the association of non-devotees, that makes sure that there's no encouragement of things that distract you from Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? So you're always, the yama and niyama means those things that will be favorable and those things that will be too distracting. Like that. But even of the favorable, those are the favorable, that means from goodness to get to pure goodness is a better situation. You know, it's seamless. Goodness to pure goodness is seamless. But going from pure goodness into passion or pure goodness into ignorance, it's a bit wild. So that's why it's recommended for a peaceful life to live in the mode of goodness. But that's not enough, because there's animals that are, they're governed by the mode of goodness, though the soul's in ignorance. But they're governed by goodness. Like a deer is very pleasant and nice, likes music, you know, stuff like that. So, but the soul is in ignorance, right? So the situation is favorable. But the point is you actually have to make that step of associating with devotees and taking advantage of that. That's what's the devotional. That's the pure goodness. So that's the recommendation, is human beings should situate themselves in goodness and then try to engage themselves in activities of pure goodness. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's it. Yes.
Sometimes we, you're saying about association of devotees, that's where all what could be qualified as a good activity or a bad activity. And sometimes I feel like devotees, we have this superiority complex, like, we're devotees, we're kind of like above everything else. And so sometimes...
The mic.
Sometimes, it's a little scary to feel like, to not be appreciating the association of devotees. Because sometimes, like, I feel that's when people get burned the most. Like, I'm just going to leave the movement because I wasn't treated properly. And like, there's kind of a superiority, like, we're better than everybody else, and because we're devotees of Krishna.
Can you explain these two? Because you're kind of giving two things. One is that you're being burned as a devotee, but at the same time you're feeling that superiority. So could it be that the person who feels superior is the one who actually gets burnt the most? You understand? In other words, it comes back home. See, it works really good if it's someone else's is at fault. But you'll only get burnt if you really think you're special and shouldn't be burnt. If we think, I'm Krishna's service, I'm supposed to be in the spiritual world serving Krishna, right? That's my actual nature. But I have made the decision to come here. So who's the rat bag, right? Okay. And I'm not Lord Brahma in this lifetime. So that means it's not the first, and I'm not very pious, right? Because Brahma is the most pious living entity, right? I'm not a great sage. I'm not a Prajapati. So that puts me pretty much down on the pretty ordinary platform, right? You know, and then we can keep going from there, you know, where we burn in, you know, a good, you know, religious family means, you know, Brahminical or, you know, noble, or are we just, you know, one of the duffers, you know, like that. You understand? So it gets down. So the point is why would we be there unless we're sinful? So all it is reactions that we're getting anyway. It's the modes of nature. So you get the reactions whether you're in the association of devotees or not in the association of devotees. What you get in the association of devotees is Krishna. No one said by associating with devotees, you won't get the results of your past karma. Do you understand? That's the mistake we're making, because we're looking at it from karma. That religion means I do good work, I get good results. So where's my good results? Right? I'm a devotee, I've been around for a while, I've been working hard. Why aren't I getting the facilities I want? Why aren't I getting the respect that I want? That's the false ego you're talking about. So it's not just false ego, we're better than karma, it's I'm better than everybody. You know what I'm saying? That is the thing. But as you find they advance, they have less of that. The madhyamas is less. The uttamas is totally non-existent. Right? So in other words, it's not a symptom of being a devotee. It's a symptom of being a neophyte devotee. All it is that you're able to note it because it's something we discuss. Do the karmis? Let's say you have a boardroom full of vaishyas. Are they going to discuss that they got false ego? No. But do they have false ego? Yeah. How much more do they have than most devotees? Even the devotee you call proud. Does he compare to the guy in the boardroom? No. So we only notice it because it's some topic we do, but they don't. It means, in fact, if you didn't have false ego, would you be in that boardroom? If you were humble, would you be in that boardroom? No. He doesn't have the drive. He doesn't have the spirit. They want to see some mode of passion there. They want to see some false ego, that desire to be the top of the company. No, you're never going to be, but if you have that drive, you're going to work real hard for us who are. They want to see false ego. Right? But because it's unspoken, everybody goes with it. So that's the difference. Is we think, oh, the karmis don't have. No, the karmis, they have that all 10, 100, thousands times more, but they don't talk about it. So therefore, it's not something to notice. So the devotee, oh, you have so much false ego. No, but the point is you notice false ego because you have it. Right? You know what I'm saying? An interior decorator notices the decor. Right? The guy who doesn't know anything about that doesn't notice. Right? Isn't it? Right? Wife goes out, gets new curtains and all that. Husband doesn't notice. Right? You know what I'm saying? You know, but you went out and got a new blender. He'll notice that. Ooh, a machine. Yeah. You know, you understand? You understand? So the point is we have false ego because we already have it, not the devotees have it.
So then, what do we do when we lose that taste for being around devotees and just seeing so many faults, especially in devotees? And like, what do we do when we're in that situation and it's...
Give up seeing the faults.
How?
By looking what's good. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Means the point is if there's a fault, that's the negative. That means then you have the qualification to find the positive. They go together. So whatever fault you can find, you can also find the natural opposite of that. So in other words, just look for it, you'll find it. It's just a matter of practice. In other words, if you're a good fault finder, that means you've had lots of practice, right? So then it's just a matter of practicing seeing what's good. That's all. You know what I'm saying? Because the fault finding, that's what's going to lose taste. That's why it, of all the anartas, is considered the worst. It's worse than sinful activities, material attachment, anything like that. Does that make sense? Because the only way you'll advance is the association of devotees. And fault finding will keep you from associating with devotees. Because if you associate with devotees, then your taste for material attachments will go away. But if you don't, they'll remain. Does that make sense? So that's why it's worse someone who finds fault than someone who actually does anything sinful. Of course, we have it backwards, but, you know, hey. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Stuff like that. Yes.
Hi, Bob. In the first part of lecture, you explained a difference of enjoying material world and a spiritual world, like, and conclusion was kind of like, so you choose where you want to be.
Right.
But often I hear, and what is in my mind, a real devotee, he says he doesn't mind to be in a hell or to be, you know, in heaven or whatever. And so it's mean if we are like, if a person are really devotee, he doesn't mind, you know, like, you know, he doesn't make distinction between, he doesn't make duality, like, this is my friend, this is, you know, my enemy. Like it says, Srila Prabhupada, wherever he would go, this would be Vrindavan, because he had Vrindavan in his heart. So, and then when you explain, like, if you're really practicing Krishna consciousness, and in the end of the day, you want to serve Krishna, it doesn't really matter what going to happen to me, where I'm going to be, and like this.
So what you're doing here is the example you're giving is talking about the situation you're in. What the discussion was about was the attitude of the result of your endeavor. In a sense, two different things. Right? There's situation, and there's what you do with the situation. Right? So we were discussing what you do with the situation, not the situation. You understand? Because if you want to go into it, the point is this is Brahman. It's spiritual. There is no material world. It's our illusion that there's such a thing as a material world. You understand? So we create this, that there's heaven, there's hell, there's all Brahman, so there's no such thing as any of those aspects. So the point is, if it's all Brahman, it doesn't matter where you are. If you're absorbed in Krishna, you're in Vrindavan. But if you're not absorbed in Krishna, then you're in heaven or hell. What we're talking about is if you want to get to that position of serving Krishna within the spiritual world, right? Then it's your choice. It's simply your choice. But why are we here? Why haven't we? The gopis saw Krishna, they surrendered immediately. Why? Because they didn't see any other source of happiness. Why are we here? Because we see other sources of happiness. If I have position, I have money, I have power, I have influence, I have, you know, facility, then I'll be happy. I mean, in other words, we're looking at situation. If our situation is good, I'll be happy. But the gopis, you know, aren't thinking that. That's why they're there. So that's what we mean by the choice. It's just where it means, the point is where you want to be situated. Because even you're in hell, if you're absorbed in Krishna, you're still in Vrindavan. So we're talking about the mentality, not the actual factual situation. Does that make sense? Because that's why we're going off the word desire. Because desire is your mood. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Something else? Yeah, over there. What does it matter? Are you a biologist or something? Or, I mean, what does it really matter? You know what I'm saying? Do you really care what kind of what do you call those things? Those little washers that are on the pistons, they got a name for it. You know, do you actually care what it is and what it's made out of, how thick it is, how well it's been made, who designed it? There was some guy in Germany came up with it, it's a new revolution. Do you care? All you care is you're driving down the road in this car and everybody looks at you because, you know, hey, you got the great car. So why do you worry about this?
Actually, how we are reciprocating, because the size
of
the...
That's a whole different thing. So, but you understand? In other words, the answer you want, ask that question. Don't say, what's the price of apples, then I'm going to tell you what the weather is. You know, but of course, if the weather's good, there's more apples, so the price is less. So if the price of apples is more, that means maybe the weather wasn't good, but it may have also been that, you know, just there were a bunch of bugs that came and ate them because the weather was too good. You know what I'm saying?
Actually,
what's your question? That's the point.
The size of that soul is 1/10,000 of the tip of... So when we are going there, so how
okay, no,
we
but,
are getting there and
but
how
the discussion
we are
was about developing love for Krishna. We gave an example. Now you're going to ask a question about the example?
How we can understand...
You know what I'm saying? I say, okay, the person, you know, cooks with a nice pot or cooks with not a nice pot. But the point is it's cooking for Krishna that's important. And then you're going to get into a question about the pot. What do you mean by nice pot? You know, is Jamie Oliver a nice pot, or do you have to get one of those other fancy French ones? You understand? What has it got to do with what we're discussing? We're not discussing the size of the soul here. I Unfortunately, I don't know mumble. You know mumble? Yeah, so you have to speak so we can hear. Yes, but what's the point? What's the point of this nice, technical, very intellectually interesting question that has nothing to do with the heart? We're talking about desires, feelings, moods here. This is not a technical question on this, on the size of the soul. So what's your point? What do you want to know by this? Okay, the soul's 10,000, the tip of the hair. You have your spiritual form. You take that up. You're going to serve Krishna in that spiritual form. Do you think anybody in the spiritual world worries about it? So then why are you worrying about it? Get there, then you worry about it. But they don't worry about it there. Not that we can't discuss this. This is not the forum for it. You know what I'm saying? It's not a dogmatic point. It's just, it's a waste of everyone's time. Yes. Right. 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 Because you have them. You want it. You want results of the desires. All it is, you don't want to face the consequences of the bad side of it. You want the house. No one's complaining, hey, I have a house. Why did material nature give me a house? I wanted a house. Why'd she give it to me? No, you're complaining about the mortgage. You know what I'm saying? Right? You want the kids and the interaction and daddy, daddy and all that. You just don't want to clean up the mess. You know what I'm saying? In other words, we're only worried about the negative side. Why do we have to get the negative side? You're not saying, why do I have to get the good side? You know, why am I forced, you know, to get the good side? Why am I born in a rich family? You know, why can't I be born in some slum somewhere where they, you know, even that they burn down? You know, is that what we're asking? No, we're only worried, why do I get the bad reactions to my action? Why can't I only get good? No, but the two go together. That's the thing. Everything is dual in this way. It means that's how the variety works. That's how energy works. If you're going to have positive, you have to have negative. You know, if you have happy, you have to have sad. Then happy has some meaning because there's sad. Right? But in the material world, it gives us trouble. In the spiritual world, it doesn't give us trouble. Right? Is Krishna that? Do we ever have a pastime? Okay, after the rasa dance, or even before the rasa dance. Is Krishna ever thinking to himself, wow, what a trip. You know, you go out there, you want to just dance with some girls, you know, nice looking girls. And they come all, you know, they don't even dress nicely. You know, they got one, you know, garment, you know, their upper garment's tight around their ankle. They put on one earring and they got, you know, I mean, hey, what is this? You know, they're girls. Can't they get it together? You know, and not only that, they all come together and they're so trippy. Each one thinks that they're the special one in the center of everything. You know, I want Radharani to be the center, but they're all, you know, tripping like this. And then after that, so I disappear trying to get him to do that. And then they pull me up on it and ask, you know, what does Atmarama mean? You know, and, you know, what kind of Atmarama are you? You know, and so like this, are you the guy that doesn't care and, you know, is, you know, insensitive and all that? This is what's going on. Did you ever hear him complain about that? You ever hear him complain? No. Why? Because that's the fun. In the spiritual world, the positive and the negative are good, just that you never notice that it's negative because you don't notice emotions. You know what I'm saying? We don't know what feminine is, so we don't see it like that. You know what I'm saying? But the point is there it's considered nice. Krishna's interacting nicely with Radharani, it's fun. She's angry with him, it's fun. It's all fun. Does that make sense? Here it's a problem. Why? Because God, who is Purusha, doesn't mind. Right? The flexible emotional state of the feminine nature doesn't bother, you know, the Purusha. Because he's fixed. What has it got to do with him? It's just, that's the interaction. That's the variety. But the problem is here we're trying to establish, I am the Purusha, I am the controller. And this feminine changing and all that means you're not the controller. But in the spiritual world, Krishna is the controller. So he puts himself under yoga maya to go through all that, because that's the fun. So this is the difference. So we only look at it, why do I have to get that? Because we think there should be nothing bad. Because from the feminine viewpoint, when they become upset with the guy, it's just part of the deal. It's not to them that experience is bad. Why? Because they're in control of it. Now, if someone else's bad feelings come on to it, now that the girl gets upset about, because she's not in control. But if she's in control of the whole mood and it's happy or it's sad or it's angry or it's night, then she's completely happy because she's in control. So Krishna puts himself under the control of the devotee. It works really nice there. Here, men don't want to put themselves under the control of the feminine nature. Why? Because they're out there feminine. You understand? So therefore, we're saying, why do I have to go through this, suffer through this? Why do I have to get the bad? If I'm not the doer, why do I have to get that? But I'm not the doer, I don't mind all the good stuff. You understand? All these things are simply to point out that there is a natural state of loving relationship between the soul and God. That's what it's for. It's not that we're overly worried about karma and how things work here. It's another thing to point out that we don't belong here. That's all. The real point is associating with devotees, one can develop that love that they have for Krishna, and we can eternally associate with Krishna on that platform of spiritual love. That's all. That's the bottom line. All these other things are details because our mind goes out into those. So there's an answer for that. Right? Any aspect of karma, any aspect of jnana that we find a value, Vedas have an answer. But ultimately, all the answers go back to love for Krishna. Does that make sense? Okay. No, we should end here. It's late. Sorry. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Chaitanya Govardhana ki.